Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On December 4th, 2007, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in Regal v. Medtronic. The case asked whether or not the Medical Device Amendment to the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act preempt a state law claim seeking damages for injuries caused by medical devices that receive pre-market approval from the Food and Drug Administration. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, Richard Epstein, a professor at the University of Chicago Law School, offers his own analysis of the case. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Epstein.
Hi, my name is Richard Epstein, and I teach law at the University of Chicago, and I'm a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and today I'm talking to you on behalf of the Federalist Society about a recent case that was just argued in the Supreme Court, which involved Regal against the Medtronic Corporation. This is a case which concerned the question of whether or not the federal law, as executed by the Food and Drug Administration, preempted a state cause of action for a defective product. For most people, the sense that there is a connection even between federal statutory regulatory law and state common law seems a little bit odd. But what has happened is that we've seen a great expansion with respect to both domains. It turns out that regulation, which is done through the Food and Drug Administration, has expanded mightily over the last 50 years, including a decision in 1976 to allow the federal government to regulate medical devices under a variety of regulatory schemes. At the same time, the ability of individuals to bring actions for defective products by way of design, particularly in the medical drug area and the medical device area, has increased as well. For the most part, the state courts have had very loosey-goosey standards about how this was to be done. They say that a product shall be regarded as defective to the extent that it is not reasonably safe or is unreasonably dangerous, which leads to an elaborate set of balancing processes. For the most part, this sits very badly with respect to the firms that make these products because they cannot be certain at the time of their manufacture whether they are safe or defective under common law standards. So, side by side with respect to the common law actions is an elaborate system of pre-market approvals, which in fact are conducted through the FDA. And with respect to devices, the question is whether or not, when a particular device has been examined by the FDA and has been approved for marketing, whether or not compliance with the design standards that are contained in that pre-market approval insulate a person from a tort suit under state law. In the Regal case, it seems pretty clear that it's a very attractive situation in order to impose this doctrine. What happened there was we had a physician who was engaged in a process of trying to clear out arteries called balloon angioplasty. And it turns out that the balloon in question that was manufactured by Medtronic was only capable of working up to a level of 8 times natural pressure. And the guy who operated the thing did so at tenfold. And sure enough, the balloon ruptured. And the question was not whether there was a possible malpractice action against the physician, but whether there was in addition an action against the manufacturer of the product on the ground that even though it was only rated for 8, it was used at 10, that was foreseeable, and therefore the product was defective even though it was not used in its intended and organized fashion. I think to most people, the idea would be frankly absurd that this is a sensible cause of action. One is not simply selling these products to an uneducated consumer. They're being supplied to professional physicians, and you would normally expect them to comply with the instructions that are going to be given with respect to its use. State law does not always take this position, however, and so the question then arises, what's going to happen with respect to the way in which the Food and Drug Administration intervenes? Well, it turns out that the federal statute here contains a provision which says, in effect, that no state law or the law of any state subdivision is allowed to supply terms that are different from or additional to those which, in fact, are included in the pre-market approval that has been created by the federal government. And the issue is whether or not this explicit preemption provision means that you cannot have a state action brought under its tort law in order to attack the product as defective. Now, one reading of this particular statute might say that a law of a state may only refer to a legislative rule or to a regulation and not to a common law action. But long before this case was decided, the Supreme Court made it very clear that common law actions were caught by the prohibition. So the issue is whether or not the instructions on the pre-market approval process are sufficiently explicit so as to require the preemption. The usual rule in the Supreme Court is that this is a matter of statutory interpretation, and it's at that point everything becomes mysterious. There are two conflicting rules that exist in these cases. One of them is a so-called presumption against preemption, which dates back to the post-New Deal period, in which what is said is that the federal government shall not be presumed to interfere with the state's ability to regulate health and safety unless it makes a clear expression to that particular point. And the other rule is says just read statutes in their natural meaning. And in this particular case, which of these two things turns out to be appropriate and why? The issue was decided in the lower courts in favor of the manufacturer of the device, chiefly on the grounds that there seemed to be an intolerable conflict between a regime which says, here, this product is okay, and a state rule coming up by common law juries afterwards saying, oh, no, it's not, because we know more than the FDA does about the way in which the approval operates. When the case came to the United States Supreme Court, the arguments were arrayed in the same form that they had been arrayed below. For the plaintiffs, the arguments essentially took the form that states have an active interest in the health and safety of their citizens, and that the kinds of regulatory processes that take place in the FDA are sufficiently porous that nobody ought to give them complete and conclusive judgment or treat them as being authoritative with respect to the issue at hand. The justices themselves were really rather troubled by this, and they were troubled on two grounds, one of which is somewhat stronger than the other. The very strong ground is that there seems to be a conflict. Are you really going to say, in effect, that if the FDA says that you must do this, a state common law judgment can say, no, you have to do that? This is called conflict preemption. And for the most part, even if the statute isn't very explicit, the moment the judges sense a conflict between what the state law requires and what the federal law requires, they are always willing to come up to the conclusion that the state law has to yield to the federal law. The second argument turns out to be a little bit different. The federal law imposes a standard which says go up to level X. The state now says, oh, no, 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 you should go up to level X plus Y. And the question here is whether or not the lower federal standard occupies the field, as the phrase is used, so as to implicitly preclude the effort on the part of any state to raise the stakes a little bit higher by demanding more of a manufacturer than is demanded by the federal government. Which way is this case going to come out? Well, fortunately, the transcripts are available to us, and I've reviewed them, and it seems pretty clear to me, at least under these circumstances, that the Supreme Court is likely to follow the path that was taken by the lower courts on this particular issue. They were very troubled by the fact that it seemed as though the manufacturer would be put into choice between a rock and a hard place, and they also were worried, I think, about the question of the long-term impact that rules like this would have on the steady rate of innovation of new products coming into a market. There is, in general, with respect to goods that are regarded as essential for our well-being and health, a deep suspicious attitude of damned if you do and damned if you don't. And what happens, therefore, in all of these cases is that the Supreme Court, at least, is conscious of the institutional implications that are involved, relatively respectful for what happens inside the FDA, and is therefore reluctant to move. I might also add that this is not the only case which is raising this particular issue. There is going to be a whole variety of questions involving the question of preemption dealing with drugs as opposed to dealing with devices. There's no time here to go into the details of these arguments, but except to point out one critical difference. In the preemption of drug cases, there is no explicit statutory language which says that an FDA conclusion that certain drugs should be issued with certain warnings is binding on the states. So it's a pure question of implication as to whether or not the exhaustive process of pre-market review and approval will occupy the field and block state action. This issue will be coming up in a case called Kent before the Supreme Court very shortly. My guess is that it's going to be a little bit closer on that one because the Supreme Court will not have the statutory hook on which it likes to rest, the kind of statutory hook which is available to it right now in the current litigation. So the prediction here is that Regal could well be unanimous in favor of affirming the lower decisions, but there's a lot more play in the preemption issue in the drug carrier, which is at least as big as it is in the device area. Just Think Vioxx. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.